Welcome to Ujiria, broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios. Ujiria is a Greek word meaning health of body and mind in aging individuals. Ujiria Radio is a weekly show celebrating the heroes that contribute to the Ujiria of our elderly and disabled population. Now joining us in the studio are your hosts, Sam Grass and Brad Culp.
Good morning. This is Sam Grass in Atlanta, Georgia. Joining me in the studio today is Lee Cantor. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Sam. How are you doing this fine spring day?
I'm doing great. Miserable weather in Atlanta, but we're doing great.
It's getting rid of the pollen. I try to look on the bright side, Sam.
You always find something positive. That's why I like you. You're very optimistic.
That's why?
Yeah. Very.
That's the only reason.
That's the only reason.
That sounds reasonable.
A little different format today. Brad is going to join us a little later in this broadcast. We're going to do our segment in Atlanta first and then transition to Dallas, Texas. And joining me today in the studios in Atlanta, Georgia, is Shelley Glenn. Shelley is Vice President of Marketing and Sales for RC Cancer Centers. Good morning, Shelley.
Good morning, Sam. How are you?
I'm doing great. I appreciate you being with us. I would like to have a little small talk and trivia, but I don't have any today, so let's get right with it.
That's fine.
Won't you tell us a little bit about yourself, Shelley, where you're from? How did you come to be with RC Cancer Centers? And we'll begin there and let it flow.
Yeah, and what's RC? Does that stand for something?
Actually, previously we were known as Radiotherapy Clinics of Georgia, and just recently in the last couple of years, we rebranded as RC Cancer Centers, as we're expanding and taking more of a national focus.
Well, that's great. Okay, so let's begin with who you are and your background, and then we'll move over to the cancer centers.
Well, first of all, as you can probably tell from my lovely accent, I am not from Atlanta, Georgia originally. I'm from the New York area.
Well, honestly, I've heard much, much heavier accents. Yours is pretty mild.
I've been working on it. I've now been here 7 years, so I think I have an excuse. Specifically, prior to moving down to Georgia, I was involved in the healthcare industry, and similar to you, Sam, in home infusion, home healthcare, pharmaceuticals, an assortment of other things. Then moving down to Georgia, change of jobs and assortment of other things, and went into a completely different industry for the last several years, and then came back to my roots of being involved with patient care and really concerned about not only adults, but specifically those that are most challenged. And I know that your program focuses on those over a certain age or in an age span. And this is really near and dear to our hearts as far as RC Cancer Centers is concerned. Specifically, I think each one of us has been touched by somebody in our family that has encountered cancer. And I think if I remember correctly, American Cancer Society statistics say that 1 in 2 or 1 in 3 people in their lifetime will be touched by cancer. And it really is much more apparent in those that are in their 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. So this really is very near and dear and something that's really important. And our average patient age is actually in the mid-60s. So what RC Cancer Centers is an organization that treats cancer patients when radiation is appropriate. Generally speaking, depending on the type of cancer, there are an assortment of ways where somebody can be treated for cancer. It could be surgery, it could be chemotherapy, or it could be radiation. Our specialty is radiation. Here in Georgia, we have 5 locations, one in Snailville, one in Covington, Lawrenceville, Decatur, and Conyers, Georgia. And we've been entrenched in the Georgia community for over 25 years. So it's really important to note that we're not just an organization that's come into the market, but for those individuals that need radiation where radiation is appropriate, there's a location with state-of-the-art technology with a qualified and board-certified radiation oncologist, at least one in every single location, physicists, dosimetrists, and really the best in their fields that are there to treat cancer patients with care and concern. In addition, we also offer wellness programs because it's treating the whole patient. It's not about just the cancer. It's treating the individual, their caregiver, their family members, and we offer programs that vary by location, whether it be massage therapy in addition to the radiation, whether it be mind-body or relieving stress, and also nutrition. So I think those are some of the things that are really important to note about RC cancer centers.
You mentioned that RC cancer center specializes in the radiation treatment of cancer, and there are other forms, i.e. surgery and whatnot. Can you tell us which form of treatment might be appropriate in given a certain circumstances?
Yeah, maybe it's a good idea to kind of give us the pluses and minuses of those three. I mean, you mentioned chemo, surgery, and radiation.
And that's a great question. And it actually depends on how the cancer presents. And please note that I'm not a clinician and I am not a doctor.
But you're the smartest person in the room.
So that absolutely.
That's a rarity. That doesn't happen very often.
That is a given.
Well, as an example, with women that have breast cancer, depending on what stage of breast cancer, where the breast cancer is, how it's spread, a woman over 50 with a certain type of breast cancer may be appropriate for partial breast irradiation. And specifically, that's treating with radiation as opposed to removal of the breasts or anything like that as far as surgery. Mm-hmm. And sometimes if the breast cancer has advanced, of course, chemotherapy may be appropriate. So it depends on how the cancer presents, what may be most appropriate. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, with cancers such as prostate cancer, there are several, probably up to 10 different ways to treat prostate cancer. And generally speaking, if you look at what the American Urologic Association, American Cancer Society will say, any of those treatment options, depending on lifestyle, may be appropriate for most prostate cancer patients. Mm-hmm. And those treatment options are watchful waiting, determining not to take any action, surgery, removing the prostate, which is removal of the prostate, and it could be some form of radiation. There are times where, if the cancer is advanced, hormonal therapy may be appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you're saying radiation, is it like you zap something with radiation, or how do you apply radiation to someone?
Actually, radiation has really advanced over the last 5, 10, 15 years. And
it's advanced from the James Bond movies, you know, where they have those big devices that point down.
Well, those devices are very
microwaves, giant microwaves. I don't know how it works.
I love your imagery here. That's
trying to paint a word.
Yeah. Are you trying to show our ages here or what?
No, he did. He wasn't trying. He did.
I don't know how it works. I'm sorry.
Well, as far as radiation is concerned, it's really very comfortable in the sense that we can contour, and that's where dosimetrists and physicists come into play. In addition to the radiation oncologist, there's a specific plan that's put into play for each particular patient so that an area that needs to be radiated is radiated, and an area that doesn't need to be radiated isn't radiated. And if you have a good organization such as RC Cancer Centers that is performing the radiation, we ensure that every single patient is checked and every single piece of equipment is checked before radiation is performed. Generally speaking, the patient is lying down in a comfortable position and the radiation is performed by beams, whether it be similar to X-ray beams that are performing the radiation. And again, I'm not a doctor, so right. I'm doing it.
Like when you're saying it's targeted, is it targeted like to the millimeter or is it like an area, like a ballpark?
It's smaller than a millimeter.
Oh, so it's exactly to the spot that it has to.
Exactly, hit. Because the last thing we would want to do is injure the patient in any way. And that's the reason that the radiation is very targeted to the area that needs to be treated and that's cancerous. As an example, with prostate cancer, there are certain areas that you don't want to radiate, whether it be the rectum or things like that, that could have serious consequences for lifestyle for that individual.
So then it aims, and then the objective is to that radiation kills the tumor or destroys it? Or
the cancer cells.
Right.
Exactly. And typically, a patient that we treat will be in and out in 15 minutes or less. And I'm talking everything. So it's really very abbreviated.
It's like outpatient?
Exactly.
Wow. Did you know that? You probably did.
Oh, I did. Yeah, I know it all.
So maybe I'm not the smartest person in the room.
No, you are.
Yeah, Sam probably thinks he is, but you're definitely the smartest person.
Can I ask a question?
Okay.
Obviously, you said per session may be as short and as quick as 15 minutes. Over the course
or less.
Over the course of the treatment, is there a general guideline as to, is it a series over a course of months? And what are some of the side effects, if any, with this form of treatment?
Great question. Couple of things. First of all, depending on the type of cancer, it could be a couple of days, a week or less of treatment, and depending on how far along that particular patient is in their cancer and what stage, or it could be a couple of months. So generally speaking, we don't have many patients that extend beyond 2 months of treatment. As far as any type of side effects, it could be some being a little uncomfortable. It's important to hydrate, as it is with a lot of other different types of treatment. But generally speaking, there are very few side effects if done properly and if the patient is monitored properly.
That's great. For our listeners, and they're always wanting to know, well, who can I go see and why should I go see them? Tell us why, what is the distinguishing factor with RC cancer centers? What's their differentiator?
Well, there are a couple of things that differentiate us. First of all, we're standalone facilities. So what the difference is there is, as opposed to going to a hospital and receiving treatment there, and there are some great institutions that provide radiation therapy. On the other hand, how nice is it to be in your own community to receive your treatment that's just close to your home or close to your work? And that's one of the things. So it's the convenience. Number two, it's important to have state-of-the-art technology, and that's something. And then it's always wonderful to be entrenched within the community. It's nice to have an organization that just didn't come in and provide treatment, you know, in the last year or two, but has been doing it for 25-plus years. We also have individuals that fly in from all over the country and all over the world for a particular treatment that we provide for prostate cancer patients called Prostrecision.
Well, now there's the great transition into the next question. I know in conversation with you earlier, we were speaking about a special event that's coming up that you'd like to speak of. So let's go ahead and throw the ball back to you and tell us about the upcoming event on prostate cancer.
Definitely. We're very, very excited. Actually, this Saturday we have an event, and we're working along with some other really important organizations here in Georgia. Specifically, RC Cancer Centers is working along with the Atlanta Hawks, Bard Medical, Atlanta Thrashers, UPS, Morehouse School of Medicine, 11 Alive Television, KISS 104 Radio, and WSB Radio. And what we've comprised is a campaign to increase awareness and decrease prostate cancer deaths in the state of Georgia. The campaign was initially launched in December with Mayor Kasim Reed at his office, and we signed a pledge card, and our goal is to get over 10,000 men to commit to be screened and or have a conversation with their doctor about prostate cancer, because we want to go from being 11th in the country as far as the number of deaths related to prostate cancer to as close as we can to the 50th state.
So Georgia has the 11th highest death rate from prostate cancer?
Per capita, yes.
Wow. Why do you think that is?
It could be a combination of things. It could be screenings, men not being screened.
Right.
It could be also, screening can also relate to education. It could be, and when I say education, I don't mean necessarily college or high school education. Right. I just mean being educated about prostate cancer.
Right.
Men determining that they don't want to be treated. It could also...
Is it a cultural thing? Is it happen to... like this part of the country more than other parts, or does it happen to whites more than blacks, Hispanics more?
Good question. Actually, there are some disparity issues when it comes to prostate cancer. Generally speaking, according to the American Urological Association, men should start being screened from and having a conversation with their doctors by age 50. And screening involves a PSA or prostate-specific antigen simple blood test and a DRE or a digital rectal exam as the first starting points or the baseline. For men that are African-American and or have a family history, brother, father, any blood relative that has had prostate cancer before a certain age, and I think the age is 65, they're in a high-risk group. So African-American men and those with a family history should begin that conversation and that screening right around age 40.
know, I've heard those statistics before, and if you don't know, don't feel bad about this. Why is the black community at higher risk, the male black community at a higher risk? Is it simply because of poor screening, poor treatment, or is there really a genetic type of issue there?
Good question. And actually, of everything that I've read, there's nothing that I've uncovered from my research. Again, I'm not a clinician, but still, there is a disparity. There is a concern. On the flip side, if you look at those from Pacific Rim countries, their rates of cancer are significantly less. But when they migrate or emigrate to the United States, the rates increase. So the question becomes, is it diet? There's no tie-in that has said that diet conclusively increases or decreases risk for prostate cancer. But I know that there are a lot of studies underway in that area.
Yeah, I've read the same thing, that they've done case studies. And those Pacific Rim males that come in a matter of, I don't know what time period, but a decade, their risk factors have increased just like someone who's been here all their life. And that would lead you to believe it's either environmental or it's dietary. But you know, as far as the conclusive evidence, who knows? Tell us a little bit about the event, what it is that you're trying to do, how you're going to do it, when it is, all those good data type of issues.
Perfect. Actually, folks can go to the Georgia, and spelling out the word Georgia, GeorgiaProstateCancerPledge.com website for more information. And specifically, this event is on Saturday morning. It's at Morehouse School of Medicine, and all of the partners have brought together some of the leaders in prostate cancer, doctors from, as an example, from the president and CEO from the Prostate Cancer Foundation is coming from California to speak, as well as those that are attending and on staff at Morehouse School of Medicine. We also have Jerry Carnes from WXIA Television, who will be moderating, a urologist, Dr. James Bennett, Dr. James Benton, who is actually one of our radiation oncologists, as well as Dr. Frank Kreitz, and folks and some physicians from the CDC. So this is a very comprehensive program, including survivors. The program starts at 10 a.m. in the morning and runs to approximately 2 p.m. It includes both meals, breakfast and lunch. So for your listeners that are concerned that it's over mealtime, that's included. And if they just go to the GeorgiaProstateCancerPledge.com mm-hmm. website, they can get more information about the program. It is really an amazing program with some very topical information that hopefully they have not heard before, now that we're incorporating not only the CDC, but as well as leaders within our community talking about prostate cancer.
Well, is there testing going to be going on, or is this just informational?
This is just informational. We do testing, and if a gentleman wants to go to the GeorgiaProstateCancerPledge.com website, mm-hmm. there is a list of locations where PSA screenings can be done for free.
Wow.
Let me give a vote of confidence or to this. Shelley, you don't know this, but I was diagnosed with prostate cancer 3 years ago, and most of the listeners know that. And I have to encourage everyone to be screened. Without the screening, mine would have not been detected. I was very, very early stage. But yet the statistics of 1 in 3, as you said, are very real. And especially men in their 50s, whether they're Caucasian or black or Asian, they need to have the screening done.
Exactly.
For our listening audience, someone like me that has just recently discovered that they might be suffering from prostate cancer, is there a piece of advice you might get them as they try to wade through all the treatment options and all the possibilities that might be there?
Yes, there are a couple of things. Number one, do your research. Even after speaking with your urologist, make sure that you look at second and third options to see from a lifestyle perspective what's going to be best for you. Because there could be quality of life issues depending on the treatment. And men in general, as I understand, want to keep their quality of life, whether it be urinary function and or sexual function. So please make sure you do your research. We strongly encourage that. Also, speak to other men that you know through your religious organization, your church, your synagogue, your associations to find out, and even within your family, who else has had prostate cancer and what their result and their expectation is, because you'd be surprised how much other men, as you just mentioned, Sam, can share with you about their experience and their research. So I would say, number one, look at your options, do your research, and even if your doctor says this is the right thing for you, make sure that you've explored every other option before you make a decision.
And very sound advice, very pertinent and very good and valid. We certainly appreciate that, Shelley. Tell our listening audience how they could reach you or reach out to RC Cancer Centers if they'd be interested.
Sure. They can reach RC Cancer Centers by going to our website, which is rccancercenters.com. And that's with an S on the end. And they can reach me via email at sglenn, and that's with two N's, at rccancercenters.com.
We appreciate that. Thank you for being our guest.
Oh, well, thank you so much. And I hope that some of your listeners take the opportunity and do come to the Prostate Cancer Symposium at Morehouse on Saturday morning.
I agree. I strongly encourage everyone to do so. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Just joining us in the studio is Brad. He just got in and was running a little late. We welcome you this morning, Brad.
Good morning. Thanks for pointing that out to everybody.
Well, I wanted to do that to transition over to Dallas, Texas. Joining us today in Dallas is Kevin Ritz. Kevin, as you know, is our co-host in Dallas, and we thought it'd be a great opportunity to give him the chance to tell us a little bit about himself and what he does. So good morning, Kevin. Are you there?
I am here. Good morning, Sam. Good morning, Brad.
Kevin's been with Griswold Special Care now for about 8-9 months. Is that correct, Kevin?
See, I started the beginning of September, so
that's close.
It feels like
yeah.
it.
Yeah, it feels like that's right. And what we wanted to do is allow Kevin the opportunity to speak not only about his past, but what it is that he brings to the seniors today. And what his thoughts are about the home care industry and Griswold Special Care. So, Kevin, I'm going to kind of just begin and ask you to tell our listening audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be with Griswold.
Absolutely. Well, I grew up in Boise, Idaho, and went to Boise State University got a degree in marketing. I spent a semester as a graduate assistant in the athletic department and decided that I was done with school. I didn't really want to go for two more years and then start that career path because it's a slow grind. And I decided to enter the workforce, and I worked for a small software company for a couple of years doing sales. They do accident and crime scene reconstruction software. And after about a year of working for them, the opportunity presented itself to move to Dallas to oversee a project with Texas A&M University. And after doing that for 6 or 7 months, the company was acquired by a large government contractor, and they decided to refocus their business efforts to the federal government contracts, which I was not part of. So they decided to end my program, and I knew somebody who had a contact with an assisted living company, and he put me in touch with them, and I was hired as a community sales manager for a small assisted living. Did the sales thing for 6 or 7 months, and then was offered a position as a executive director of a larger assisted living in Plano. I did that for a year and a half, and then decided it was time to move on, and found Brad in Griswold, and I've been here since, as I said, last September.
For our listening audience, Kevin, tell us what it is that Griswold brings to the marketplace and your function in that arena.
Yeah, Griswold offers, you know, their slogan is extraordinary home care at affordable rates, and one of the things I've found is that the extraordinary home care is absolutely true. We have some of the best caregivers that I've come across working in the assisted living industry, and then also here, I've seen a lot. And we hire the best. We go through a rigorous screening process and make sure that everybody is who they say they are and has the necessary training to make sure that they're providing our clients with the best care possible. And we offer those services at rates that are extremely affordable when you compare it to the marketplace. And that is a win-win for our clients. They get care that is exceptional, that is better than what they're going to find somewhere else, and they're going to pay less for it. And that is extremely important to the seniors when you're living on a retirement income or on a VA pension. Saving money is key, and to offer great service that allows them to stay at home as long as possible is a very rewarding prospect.
So, Kevin, you've seen both sides of this, and obviously Griswold Special Care exists to help people stay in their homes as long as possible. You've been on the assisted living side. Can you talk a little bit about the difference between a person staying in their home and making a decision to move to an assisted living, and you know, why would somebody do that? And, you know, on the other hand, why do people want to stay in their homes?
Right. You know, over the almost 2 years that I worked in the assisted living industry, I saw a lot of residents come in who didn't need assisted living yet. The family was doing the right thing and being proactive and getting them out of a situation where they were alone and potentially in a dangerous situation. But, you know, moving from a home that you've lived in for a long time is a very difficult transition. And I saw a lot of residents come in and adjust very well, and I saw a lot of residents come in and deteriorate very rapidly because of that change. So while I think assisted living is a good and necessary industry, it's not for everybody. And that's where Griswold comes in, is for the people who need to stay at home and are safe and can benefit from that. We offer the opportunity for them to remain in an environment that they're familiar with and stay independent as long as possible to prevent those rapid deteriorations. Because giving up your home and moving into essentially an apartment complex isn't for everybody.
Kevin, as you were talking about Griswold, you mentioned a screening process for the caregivers. What in that? Obviously, every home care agency wants to tout that they have the best caregivers in the market. What is it in that screening process that gives us some level of confidence that we, in fact, do have the best? What's the process?
I think there's two things. The behavioral interviews is something that is extremely important. Finding out how a caregiver would react in a certain situation, giving specific examples of that behavior, how they treat people in specific environments, those are key. The other is the reference checks, calling on former employers and asking very pointed and specific questions that they don't always have to answer, they're not required to, but you ask the questions anyway, hoping that you can get them to tell you how that employee handled themselves in those situations. And then the personal reference checks, finding out what their acquaintances and people they know think about them, and in screening those people for any red flags that might indicate that maybe this person may not be a good fit. And then, you know, if they come out of that and you feel confident that they're going to be a good fit and they're going to take good care of your clients, then you move forward. And I think those two things together give us confidence going into the home that we can say, yes, this person meets these requirements, they meet our expectations, and we feel comfortable sending them into your home.
Yeah, I just to kind of elaborate on that, I always like to explain to potential clients that we know no more about the caregiver than they do,
except for the fact that we try to speak in depth with people who have had a previous relationship with that caregiver. And there are many employers that won't answer those behavior-oriented type questions, as you described, for legal reasons.
Right.
I always like to explain to the client, if that's true, so be it. We don't use the caregiver because we have to have a level of confidence that we've done everything a prudent person could do to determine who the individual is. I like to tell them that we typically begin with 25, 30 caregivers and end up with one. So it is certainly a long, tedious process that we take in trying to determine who the caregivers are.
Yeah, and something I always bring up is I have grandparents that are going to be nearing the time to make the decision to bring somebody into their home or move, and I am not going to send somebody into a client's home that I would not feel comfortable sending into my grandparents or in, you know, 10, 15, 20 years, my parents' home. And so, you know, I want to give them the level of confidence to know that that I am not going to put them in a situation that I wouldn't put myself in.
Kevin, talk about some of the issues. Certainly an affordable option in the marketplace is to find a private caregiver, and it's done frequently. What are some of the things that a family would need to be aware of if they were thinking about hiring a private caregiver?
Yeah, that's a great question, and we do see that a lot. And the number one thing is insurance. What happens if that caregiver injures somebody or injures themselves? And what happens if they decide to walk away with thousands of dollars of valuable items? You also have the tax implications. As soon as you bring somebody into your home, they become your employee. So you have to worry about the IRS implications there, as well as we have seen kind of become a hot topic, the immigration issues. You've got to make sure that person can legally work for you. So the benefit to using a company like Griswold is that we handle all of those aspects for you. We have the insurance and the bonding and the licensing, and, you know, it may cost a little bit more, but the peace of mind and the benefit of that far outweighs the risks of bringing somebody into your home.
And let me go back to the conversation we were having earlier about assisted living. The service that Griswold Special Care provides, is it only provided in an individual's home?
No. We actually have quite a few clients who are either in an independent living or an assisted living, and we're there to provide more care than what an assisted living can offer. In an assisted living environment, you may have a ratio of one employee to 5 to 10 residents, depending on the size of the community and their staffing structure. With a caregiver that you bring in, you get one-on-one attention. So we can complement those services that you're receiving at an assisted living or an independent living, and we can work hand-in-hand with the community to take care of their resident and our client. So, yeah, absolutely, they can work together.
So in an assisted living or in a skilled nursing facility, they do have CNAs on the floor. What's, in your experience, what's the ratio of clients to CNAs on the floor in those types of facilities?
Well, in my direct experience, we were 1 to 20. We had a very, I guess for lack of a better word, very bad ratio. The company I was working for has convoluted and risky staffing model. And it, depending on the level of care of the residents, you could potentially have 30 or 40 residents and only one CNA there if their needs were not that high. So that's something that you really have to investigate very thoroughly when you're considering an assisted living. Ask about that staffing model and find out what that ratio is, because that's a huge problem, because if somebody pulls the cord, if they end up on the floor and pulls the cord, and you've got a person who is in charge of a large number of residents, it could be quite a while before they can respond to that call. And
that being said, though, it could be the right decision to put a loved one in an assisted living community and then maybe augment with home care, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I would say that if you're moving into an assisted living, then they are going to provide some services that we don't. A lot of them have registered nurses on staff who can provide skilled care. They can do injections and the things that a non-medical home care provider can't do. But where they sometimes are lacking is in that one-on-one care. And so if you need to move into an assisted living, that could be a very real need. And if you also need some additional attention, then look into bringing in a home care company to augment those services that the assisted living can't provide that we can't.
Yeah, Kevin, I just want to be fair, and I don't want this to sound like that we are saying that home care is where everyone should be. It is dependent upon the individual, and we have to be honest. In the home does create some potential issues that you've got to be aware of. One which is common is socialization. Unfortunately, it is difficult to have a active social life with home care while you're home. The advantage in assisted living is just the opposite. You have certainly a great opportunity for that. So again, I just want to be fair to everyone that it is really dependent upon the individual and the situation, and you have to weigh each according to what your needs and desires are.
Well, and that being said, you know, we had our friend Alex Namath on a few weeks ago from Friends Place with adult daycare, and so you know there are multiple combinations of services that can be put together. So home care along with the adult daycare a few days a week could certainly provide some of that socialization.
Yes, absolutely, and that's another thing to always look into is that activity program at the assisted living. Find out what they're doing and if they're doing it, so that if that's important, you're making sure that you're looking at a community that is going to meet those needs, because not all activity programs are created equal.
Let's move on. Kevin, obviously you've had the opportunity for the last almost 3 years to work in the senior arena. Why do you do it? What is it that keeps you going?
Well, I had this is the common story. I had a great grandmother who was living alone, and she was a big cat person, and in the middle of winter in Boise, Idaho, decided that she needed to feed this cat at the bottom of her driveway, slipped and fell on ice and broke a hip. And she was fine up to that point, but that was the beginning of the end. And if she had just had somebody around to help her with some of the things around the house that she needed help with, and if there had been a caregiver in the home to help her feed that cat, maybe she never would have fallen and she would have been with us for a lot longer. And so I never considered the industry until I was looking for a job and just kind of happened upon the industry. But now that I'm here, it's that personal story that you hear a lot about, but it's true. And you know, I see how we influence lives of individuals every day and make a difference in making them more comfortable, making them safer, and providing them with a way to be comfortable and live a lot longer. And that's what keeps me going.
Yeah, I concur. I understand. There's a joy in walking out from a family and knowing that you have eliminated some fears and concerns and are able to help. It really is rewarding.
Yeah.
Let's kind of wrap this up with the same question we ask all of our guests. If we have members in our listening audience that are thinking about alternative care or facilities or home care for a loved one, what high-level piece of advice could you give them as they start this process?
Yeah, the number one thing I would say is be proactive and do something before you think you need to do it. So like in the instance of my great-grandma, if we had been a little bit more proactive and seen that there was a danger there, maybe it would have prevented something from happening. So start thinking about what the next step is and start preparing for it, whether that's mentally preparing your loved one for the change that needs to occur, whether it's financially preparing for it by looking into your resources, whether it's the VA in attendance program, whether it's looking at your long-term care insurance policy, whether it's buying a long-term care insurance policy. It's never too early to do that. And just make sure that you're prepared for that next step and that you make a decision before it's too late.
We appreciate that. How could our listening audience in Dallas reach out to you and Griswold?
Yes, our phone number for the main office is 972-554-0700. You can email me at kevin@gscdallas.com, or you can call me direct at 469-327-2574.
Kevin, we appreciate that. You're a brave soul for giving out your personal cell number. I commend you for that. We certainly appreciate your diligence, your commitment to Griswold Special Care. Thanks for speaking with us today.
You bet. Thanks, Sam. Thanks, Brad.
Well, that's it for today, ladies and gentlemen. We certainly would like to thank Shelley and Kevin for both being our guests. We would like to remind our listening audience that if they want to listen to a rebroadcast of today's show, they can do so at eugeriaradio.com. And in closing, we, as always, want to remind you that if the youth of our nation is its greatest national resource, it goes without saying that the seniors are its greatest national treasure. Thank you. God bless.
Eugeria Radio is sponsored by Griswold Special Care and broadcast live from the Business Radio X studios.